two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. You can read me at kslsports.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ben's Hoops, where I post all my articles, try and interact with Jazz fans as much as I can, and keep you updated on the latest information with the Utah Jazz. First off, we got a bunch coming up on the show. Going to talk a little bit about the Jazz new hires. Del Demps, the general manager from New Orleans, who's now joining Quinn Snyder's coaching staff, as is Keon Dooling, a longtime NBA veteran, played for about 13 years. We'll talk about that. I'll address two players that I've broken down from the draft that I kind of like for the Jazz, Tyler Bay and Trey Jones. Both could be realistic options with the 23rd pick. And then if we have some time, talk a little bit about some of your questions if you sent them in the mailbag. I know I'm kind of bad about it. I send out the tweet right before I record this, but hopefully you get an immediate return if you do see that tweet, and one of the reasons why it's worth following me. All right, let's talk about Del Demps and Keon Dooling. Unusual moves for the Jazz, but I think there's reasoning behind both of these that makes some sense to me. Del Demps was the general manager for the New Orleans Pelicans from 2010 to February of 2019. He was fired, or he and the Pelicans decided to part ways in the midst of the Anthony Davis saga, which you remember was a mess. Gail Benson, the owner of the Pelicans, said they didn't want to trade Davis, and then kind of it became a foregone conclusion when he signed with Clutch Sports that he had to get traded. It was obvious the only place he was going to go was the Lakers. Lakers were offering a lot at one point. I mean, it seemed like every young player you could have, and then it seemed like they wanted to pull back on that. Finally, Gail Benson decided they didn't want to have Del Demps in charge anymore when they were making this move, even though he had overseen pretty successful moves in the past. He traded Chris Paul to the Los Angeles Clippers. He was the GM when the Pelicans acquired Drew Holiday, and we know how good Drew has been for the Jazz, or I should say for the Pelicans. He was there when they acquired DeMarcus Cousins, which was a big blockbuster trade. So he's shown some ability to do that. He's not going to be doing that as a coach, but I think you kind of get a sense of the relationships he has around the NBA, and you know that can be helpful as the Jazz are going to try and continue to add players to their rotation and to their roster. Just having a guy who's been around and knows guys, it's nice to be able to say, hey, I've you know, played for him when he was the GM. Maybe I'll come play with him when he's an assistant coach. So I think there's some sense there. He and Quinn Snyder have a lot of crossover. Quinn has talked a lot about Del Demps in his past. They were both with the Austin Toros. Demps was the general manager for the Austin Toros, who's the D-League affiliate for the, or G-League now, affiliate for the San Antonio Spurs. Quinn Snyder was the head coach. Quinn has talked a lot about the relationship they had, how they built that team, got Quinn Snyder really started back on his coaching trajectory to becoming the head coach of the Utah Jazz. So I think that's a long-existing head coach, or a long-existing relationship, I should say, for the Jazz head coach, and it makes sense there. I also think it makes sense for the relationship between Dennis Lindsay in the front office and Quinn Snyder in the coaching staff. I know the Jazz have liked having Justin Zanuck around to kind of be a bridge between those two, just to make sure everything runs smoothly, keep lines of conversation open and easy. And I think Dell Demps can do that as well, because Dell has experience as a general manager. He does know Dennis Lindsay as well from his past and has this good relationship with Quinn Snyder. It probably is beneficial to have another voice who's kind of done both, who's done general manager and is now coaching, and can kind of speak to the intricacies of both jobs in keeping that relationship going and just getting everyone on the same page all the time. I think there's probably some value there. And it's potentially insurance, though it sounds like Demps wants to stay as a coach, or at least he wants to try coaching. It's potentially insurance if you do lose Justin Zanuck somewhere, if he takes a job as a general manager or a vice president of basketball operations in somewhere. We know he's had those interviews and gotten close to getting those jobs with the Bucks. I think he made it to the second round or the final round of hiring for the Chicago Bulls before they went with the Nuggets assistant. So he will get a job eventually somewhere else, and it might make sense to already have Dell Demps on roster or on staff to move into that position or kind of help with that position. So I think that's why that move makes sense. Keon Dooling, on the other hand, is a little bit of a departure from what the Jazz have generally done. Snyder doesn't have a lot of NBA experience as far as players go on his bench or in his developmental staff. Now, that's not to say there's none. Sagana Jop maybe has the most, and a lot of fans probably don't even remember that Sagana Jop is on this coaching staff, because you don't see him a whole lot. He sits behind the bench. But when you think of Alex Jensen and Vince LaGarza and a lot of the names that the Jazz have, they're not NBA guys. They're not guys who played 10 years in the league, 13 years in the league. You know, Demps even played 3 years. But Dooling, having played 13 years, it is interesting. It's a little bit of a switch. Quinn Snyder hasn't really hired, you know, former head coaches, and not that Dooling has that, but it seems like Quinn has kind of wanted to carve out his own guys and have his own buy-in from his own players or from his own assistant coaches that maybe don't have these pre-existing biases from their time in the NBA. And so bringing in Dooling could be a change. We'll have to see how much he's around. You know, the Jazz did this with Raul Lopez, too, who played with the Jazz for a while. And they had run across each other while I think Quinn was coaching in Europe. But Dooling coming in to help and I think kind of fill that role that was filled by Johnny Bryant, who's now with the New York Knicks, I think that's interesting. I think his experience is interesting as a veteran, working with some of the Jazz younger players to get them to that point where they're comfortable being in their fourth, fifth, sixth years in the league, and what that could mean for those guys, including obviously Donovan Mitchell, Jordan Clarkson, players like that, if the Jazz are able to re-sign both of those guys. So I think those are that's the value to that role. He's been a very outspoken advocate for mental health for players. He's talked a lot in the Players Tribune about his own past. He was a victim of sexual assault when he was like 7 years old. So he's had this like significant life experience and has talked about it, and has talked about having to commit himself to an institution just to get help because he was really having a hard time with some of these mental issues. So I think that's another reason to bring him in. It's becoming a bigger and bigger topic right now in the NBA and in professional sports, and rightfully so. We know we've heard what Aaron Rodgers said this week, what Dak Prescott has said in the last couple of weeks from the Dallas Cowboys. It's a growing concern and something that I think NBA teams are trying to be aware of. And Keon Dooling sounds like he's had pretty good experience dealing with it and overcoming it, and has some advice on how to help other players potentially with the Jazz. So I think that could be helpful. And I think that's probably another part of the move why the Jazz were comfortable bringing him in. All right, that'll do it for Dell Demps and Keon Dooling. Let's shift over a little bit. We can talk about a couple of draft options for the Jazz. Sitting at number 23 on the board, we'll start with the player who I broke down on Monday. You can find this at kslsports.com. Colorado forward Tyler Bay played 3 seasons at Colorado. 6'7", 220 pounds, reportedly has a 45-inch vertical, super strong body, plays small forward and power forward, might even be able to play some small ball five, but that's really just depending on who he's guarding. He draws comparisons to Andre Roberson, who if you'll remember, he's been hurt for the last year and a half or so for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Also went to Colorado. That might be where some of those comparisons come from. Freakishly athletic, ridiculous defensive instincts, just has an understanding of how to not blow up a play or a pass or lock down his man. I mean, blows up huge, you know, swaths of the floor. I mean, he just absolutely, because of his length, reportedly a 7'1" wingspan, 6'7", with that freakish speed and athleticism, he just erases so much space on the defensive end of the floor and takes up so much space that he really is disruptive as a help defender, as an on-ball defender, the way Robertson was with Oklahoma City before his knee injury. I've talked about him being a potential option for the Jazz in free agency. But Tyler Bay is the type of player who I think could probably earn minutes as a rookie because he's so good defensively. Right now on offense, he's probably, if Jazz fans remember what Jeremy Evans was, he's probably Jeremy Evans. He's going to catch a lot of lobs because he can jump so high. I do think there's value from that. He shot 41% from the three-point line in college and really increased his numbers every year. I think he took 5 his first season as a freshman, missed them all, took something like 13 as a sophomore and only hit 6, or it wasn't even that many. Maybe it was like 5. And then he took 22 as a sophomore and only hit 5, and then took 31 as a junior, which is 1 per game. You remember the college season was ended pretty abruptly due to the coronavirus, but he hit 13, and that's 42%. So it's a promising number that he hit him like that, and actually had some plays run where he was hitting threes off motion, which is interesting. That's a hard thing to do. There's a lot of guys who are only spot up shooters if they're bad shooters, but they can knock it down at a consistent rate. He actually had some plays on some pin downs that were run for him to come out and get open threes that were nice looking plays. And if he can hit that at the NBA level and show that he can be a consistent catch and shoot shooter, he really has some great upside as a 3-and-D player because he's a terrific defensive player. He shot 74% from the three-point line, or I should say from the free throw line, excuse me. That's another good sign. Generally, if you're in the 60s or high 50s as a free throw shooter, you're not going to develop that three-point range. But if you're in the 70s, 80s, it's probably an indicator that you do have some touch. And so Bay shooting 74% from the free throw line, I think, is a really good sign for his development as a three-point shooter. He may not shoot 5 a game or 6 a game the way we think of, kind of these traditional 3-and-D players like Royce O'Neal. But if he could play power forward on the offensive side of the ball, off the bench, or small forward in a starting role at some point, and could take 3 or 4 or 2 or 3 and hit him at a 35-40% rate and then play absolutely explosive, blow up the opposing team's offense, defense, he has a role. He has a really high-level role, and it's not hard to imagine him when you watch him play turning into the type of defensive specialist I think the Jazz haven't really had probably since Andre Kirilenko. I mean, I don't think he's that good of a defensive player, but he's in the conversation where if everything developed right and he could earn 20 minutes on the floor, he would be in the conversation for All-NBA defensive team. He's that good of a player on that side of the ball. So his offense needs some work. He's really not a guy who's going to put the ball on the floor a ton. He's not a playmaker. He makes some okay passes. He catches the ball really a lot down low and uses his excellent athleticism to finish over people. He dunks a ton of basketballs. But otherwise, he's not going to give you a ton on the offensive side of the ball. Those are kind of his cons, and that's kind of the issue with him. But super smart by all accounts. He's older. He's 22, which is really old for a junior, so his upside is a little bit lower. But if you have a team like the Jazz that feels like he could slide into a role immediately, I think he becomes really intriguing. So go read my full report on Tyler Bay out of Colorado at kslsports.com. Earlier today, I talked about, or I wrote about Trey Jones, who's the sophomore guard from Duke. He just won the Defensive Player of the Year at Duke and the ACC Player of the Year at Duke, and that's for the entire ACC. So he's really an intriguing point guard, in my opinion. He's pretty non-spectacular. He's not going to do a lot when you watch him that blow your socks off, unless you love watching a guy kind of D up, stay in front of his man, even when he's going up against NBA talent like Cole Anthony, who's Greg Anthony's son, who was at one point kind of a top 5 draft pick. He's slipped down boards a little bit, but is still very firmly in those teens. Trey Jones really showed very promising defense his entire career at Duke, really showed it against top-level NBA prospects as well. He's going to be a Ricky Rubio-type defender at the next level. And if you remember, Jazz fans, you just didn't have this issue with guys penetrating. One of the reasons why the Jazz defense slipped so much this year was opposing ball handlers getting into the paint and challenging Rudy Gobert, and it hurt Rudy Gobert's Defensive Player of the Year award opportunity. It hurt the Jazz defensive rating overall. And Trey Jones, in time, he's probably not going to do it as a rookie. A lot of rookies aren't very good defensively, even if they have good instincts in college. Could develop into that Ricky Rubio type. In fact, his steadiness of play on both sides of the ball looks a lot like Ricky Rubio to me. He's not super quick. Rubio was pretty quick, but he's not insanely fast with the ball in his hands. He's not De'Aaron Fox. He's not going to light you up in transition. He's not going to beat you off the dribble in isolation. Ricky Rubio really didn't either. He doesn't get to the paint and finish a whole lot, but he's a 35% three-point shooter, 36% three-point shooter. his sophomore year at Duke. I thought that was very promising. 16 points, 6 assists without ever really looking to score the ball. He just scores in the pick and roll by getting good shots, mid-range jump shots, or by hitting open three-pointers, and grabs 4 rebounds. He really is very Ricky Rubio-y to me. And if he can hit the three-point shot with some consistency, I think you really like him. If he doesn't, he's probably a little bit more of a DeLon Wright-type player from the University of Utah. DeLon is a much better finisher in the paint because he's so long and has pretty good athleticism. Trey Jones is still going to have to work on that. But I like Trey Jones. I put some videos of him on this article I wrote at kslsports.com. I think you'll be intrigued by him. Yeah, I don't think initially when you read about him, it's going to blow your hair back. But the more you watch him, the really more you start to see kind of the nuances to his game. And he starts to jump off the page quite a bit, I think, when you watch Duke play. And would be an intriguing option and makes sense. The Jazz have a surprising history with Dennis Lindsay of drafting blue blood players. Remember, Trey Burke was Dennis Lindsay's first draft. He was from Michigan when Michigan was going on all these great runs and has a great basketball history. The Jazz have drafted guys from Kentucky. Think of Trey Lyles. Louisville, think of Donovan Mitchell. Duke a couple of times, think of Rodney Hood and Grayson Allen. The Jazz really do like looking at those, and even Tony Bradley from North Carolina. The Jazz really like looking at those high-level programs recruiting highly rated players, and then the Jazz draft those kids, especially when they feel like it's a value grab somewhere down the first round. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Trey Jones if he's available for the Jazz at 23, and he should be. He's kind of projected 28, 29, up to the low 40s at the latest. It's kind of where he's projected to be drafted. I think if the Jazz felt comfortable that they were getting a strong defensive guard who could turn into a Gary Trent type of player with Portland with a little bit better offense, I think that's a really good value at the end of the first round. So I like Trey Jones. If you're a Jazz fan, go read up on Tyler Bay and Trey Jones, who I've written reports on for their NBA draft and their fit with the Utah Jazz coming up in the NBA draft on November 18th. All right, we did get some questions on the mailbag. Appreciate everybody who sends those in. Looks like we got about 7 of these. I'll try and go down and break them all down. My friend Nate Dowdle, also my boss. Okay, fan dream on this one. Any legit chance the Jazz pick up Derek Favors? I've touched on this a little bit in my last podcast. Yeah, I think it's very realistic. In fact, I think it might be the most realistic if the Jazz are going to use their full mid-level exception on a player and use it on a big man. Derek Favors makes the most sense because there's mutual interest. Now Dell Demps is back with the Jazz, who traded for Derek Favors. He's going to feel wanted if he comes to the Jazz because Dell Demps wanted him, and we know the Jazz wanted him but had to give up on him to make space for Bojan Bogdanović and Mike Conley. Yes, I think the Jazz would love to have Derek Favors back. So I don't even think it's a fan dream. I think there's a very realistic chance it happens. Pete, lots of rumblings of Favors coming back. Haven't seen much about Millsap. Would he take the MLE or whatever, or can the Jazz offer, or whatever the Jazz can offer to come be a big wing and a defender at the four? Pete, I talked about that again a little bit on my last podcast as well. I think, and I put him in my top 10 free agency targets for the Jazz. I wrote that last week. You can find it at kslsports.com. Yeah, he was my number 3rd guy behind Favors and Aaron Baines as far as bigs go. I wouldn't pay him more than the mid-level exception. That doesn't mean somebody else won't. Now, the mid-level exception this year is $9.7 million, somewhere in that range. It's like 18 teams in the league have it, including the Jazz. There's going to be competition for a guy like Paul Millsap, who probably still wants to start. The Jazz are going to want him to come off the bench. If the Jazz can convince him that he's in a winning position and is going to be the 6th or 7th man, depending on what happens with Jordan Clarkson, and is going to get a ton of looks and won't have to defend the opposing team's best big man the way he has to right now playing next to Nikola Jokic, I think that's probably pretty intriguing. But I don't know what his kind of relationship is with people in Utah now. They did kind of let him walk away unceremoniously. He may feel slighted by that. He went and proved himself making 4 All-Star games in Atlanta. He's made over $100 million in his career by a lot. He's made way more than that now. He may not want to come back to Utah, but I don't think it's a bad idea, especially if he had interest. And he shot 43% from the three-point line this year. So that's the type of guy I think the Jazz could use. R. Miller on Twitter, what are your thoughts on the hires made today? I talked about those a little bit earlier. Honestly, I think they're a sign of progression and maturity for the Jazz. I think hiring guys with more proven experience shows that the Jazz are trying to take that next step and make sure that they're not missing anything with some of their young guys. And that's no slight at all to the coaching staff they have existing on this roster or on this staff. I think it just has a sign that the Jazz feel like, hey, we think we can take this next step, and we think we can bring in some guys with some experience that will help us get there. So I really like it. Well, duh, on Twitter. Do the Jazz try to move George Niang if they can keep Jordan Clarkson? Here's the thing about George Niang. I actually think he's an NBA player. I think he's a ninth guy. I think the Jazz were forced to play him as their seventh guy. And that gap is actually really enormous in the NBA. It's kind of funny. You don't think it's that big. But the seventh guy off your bench, because Jordan Clarkson should be your sixth man, or somebody of that level who can step in and be a starter, and maybe doesn't need to be playing 30 minutes during the regular season, but is really good at 25 minutes, and then is comfortable playing 35 minutes if you have to in a playoff game. Like, has to be able to play in a playoff game. So does your seventh guy, and so does your eighth guy. They have to be guys you can play in the playoffs. I think you have to have eight guys you feel comfortable playing. Denver is showing the value of having 10 guys right now that can play in the playoffs. The Jazz had six this year. They were playing eight. And unfortunately, George Niang was number seven and probably needs to be number nine. Like, I don't know right now if I had two guys that were better, let's say a Derek Favors or a Paul Millsap, and then a Mo Harkless or whoever you get with that other biannual exception that you can sign. Or let's say Jeff Green and Ed Davis had worked out. Those guys would have been playing. I think that would have been your eight-man rotation with Jordan Clarkson, and you never would have had George Niang playing in the playoffs. And that's no slight to George Niang. He's a ninth man in the NBA. Because other moves the Jazz made didn't work out, he was forced to play seventh. So I think the Jazz try and bring him back. I don't think he costs any money. He has a very realistic skill set. That's a dangerous skill set. He's a great three-point shooter. He's legitimately an elite three-point shooter. And those guys have value in the NBA. And he'll sign somewhere else if he doesn't sign with the Jazz. So I don't think there's any reason to get him away, let him get away while you own the rights to his contract and he's on a non-guaranteed deal. But I'd probably try and extend him to a very team-friendly deal. And he's never made very much money in his NBA career. So he might feel inclined to do that and willing to do it. And the Jazz have taken a chance on him. So I think that's a good sign. Well, Duh also asks, what did the Jazz do with Ed Davis? Let him stay on the bench for another season? My gut is the Jazz try and move Ed Davis, and my gut is they try and move him for a second-round draft pick or the right to swap second-round draft picks where the Jazz don't have to take much on. I'm sure they would love another second-round draft pick in this year's draft, and if you could trade Ed Davis for $5 million and his $5 million salary and clear that off your books and get wherever your second-round pick is. I mean, if you could get one in the 30s, that would be unbelievable. I don't think you can, but even if you're getting one in the 40s or 50s for a team that says, hey, we could use what Ed Davis brings. Maybe that's a Golden State or a Philly or San Antonio. I'm just kind of naming names off the top of my head that could use a little bit of an improvement with their reserve bigs. Brooklyn next year, taking him back to Brooklyn or Portland while they lose Hassan Whiteside. You know, all of those I think could make some sense in trades for the Jazz. And honestly, if the Jazz are bringing back a Derek Favors or a big man, and I think they recognize they need a better big man, plus the fact that Tony Bradley had already unseated him, yeah, I think you try and move Ed Davis. And I don't think it was because Ed Davis did anything wrong. He just wasn't a great fit. And you could clear that $5 million, and that would be more helpful for the Jazz as they're a little bit close to the tax apron, depending on what they do with their free agents and how much Jordan Clarkson costs. But if you could clear that $5 million and get an asset back, like a second-round pick, I think that would be great. Defensive wings that are attainable realistically from TJ on Twitter. A couple of names I've listed that I like for the Jazz: Justin Holiday. He probably falls into that Paul Millsap category where he's going to get the mid-level exception from somewhere. So the Jazz are one of 18 teams trying to prove that they have the best spot for him. Jazz might be able to tell him he can start. Jazz might be able to say, hey, Royce O'Neal did not blow our hair back in the playoffs. We like him, but we think he's a bench player. But we want you to come in and be our starter. Justin Holiday is a name I would put there. I touched on Mo Harkless earlier. I think Mo is a very realistic option for the Jazz. He plays for the Knicks. Used to have kind of a much more stellar reputation, but signed a four-year, $40 million deal, and people soured on him because he probably didn't quite live up to that. But he's a really good defensive player. I mean, he can defend four positions on the floor, point guard through power forward. Those guys are valuable, and the Jazz don't really have one of those guys outside of Royce O'Neal. And even then, you know, you don't trust Royce doing it all the time or for 35 minutes a night. It'd be nice if you could give him a break. So I think Mo Harkless makes a little bit of sense there. And Andre Roberson, who's coming off that devastating knee injury, but did play eight games in the bubble with the Thunder. Thunder have a ton of money on their salary cap, so I don't know how much money they can realistically throw at him. And I don't have any idea what the market's going to be like for Roberson. I don't know if he's going to get, you know, $8 million because of his reputation as one of the best wings, defensive wings in the NBA, or if he's going to get $1.5 million, the veteran minimum, because everyone's so scared of his injury. So I think that's the fear, and I think if you wanted to be a little bit aggressive and throw the biannual exception, which is a little over $3 million at him, you might have a good shot, and you can only sign him for 2 years. So realistically, it's a pretty low gamble for you know what's going to be less than 3% of the salary cap next season. Well, duh, on Twitter with another question. He says, do you think Donovan maintains his level of play next season? Obviously not 50 points per game level, but he's made a huge leap in the Denver series. I think Denver was a bad matchup. I think Donovan Mitchell was a bad matchup for Denver, the same way Jamal Murray's been a bad matchup for the Jazz. I think playing in the bubble's unrealistic as far as not having pressure from players or from fans and, you know, being in these different arenas every night and the travel. I think that is one of the reasons we saw Donovan play so well. I do think he's taken a next step, though. I do think he recognized the value of getting at the free throw line. I think he recognized he has an ability to take over games like that. He's not going to shoot 55% from the three-point line and 50% from the floor and 90% from the free throw line. You know, those aren't attainable. And nor do you want him trying to play that hard for 82 games. I mean, that's insane. He would be burned out by the All-Star break at the latest and wouldn't have much to offer. But I bet his points per game jumps again next season. I think his passing was maybe the best part of his game that we saw beyond his raw scoring. I think he's really passing the ball as well as he's ever done in his career. I think it helped rebuild that relationship with Rudy Gobert, which was really strong. I thought that was promising. I think that's his development, is that he becomes a better leader with the ball in his hands. And that's a huge thing. You know, if you can be that guy, there's no reason. Honestly, he can't have a Damian Lillard-like career. And we know how good Dame is. Dame's pretty universally regarded as a top 10 player. And Donovan Mitchell is a better defensive player than he is. Travis on Twitter, Conley for Tobias Harris, Rudy for Wiggins in the Golden State number two. Tobias Harris's contract is so long, and he's going to be making $45 million at the end of it. I just don't think you can do it. I actually think the Jazz like the flexibility they're going to have at the end of this season with Mike Conley's contract coming up, and we'll see what they do. If they can re-sign Jordan Clarkson, I wouldn't rule them out as trying to get a one-year deal for Clarkson at kind of a high number. And then having that expire and having $50 million come off the books next year. I know Rudy's probably going to get a raise. Donovan's going to get a significant raise. But you might have a little bit of free agency money, actually, which I wasn't really accounting for. Especially if you wanted to really clear space this year, you could make a couple of moves to clear some of that space for expiring deals. And be a player next year in the market, especially if Donovan proves to be a guy that people want to play for, or Rudy is a guy people want to play with. If you can play next to those guys and you're some of these veterans that are becoming available next year in free agency. And now I'm not going to say the Jazz are going to sign LeBron or Anthony Davis or Giannis Antetokounmpo, though I think the Jazz would love to make a run at any of those guys. Chris Paul is a free agent. I don't think the Jazz are going to, or if he waived his player option, he's obviously not going to do that. So he might not be available. But it's just a loaded free agency class coming up next season. And I think if the Jazz liked that they had some space, I wouldn't rule that out. And I don't think they would sacrifice it now, this offseason, to get a guy like Tobias Harris or an Andrew Wiggins. Obviously, if you could get the number two overall pick, you would like that, but that doesn't mean the Jazz couldn't do what they did with the Deron Williams deal, where if it feels like you're not going to get to re-sign Rudy Gobert, let's say you don't get a deal worked out this offseason, you're getting into next year, the season starts in January, probably going to have the trade deadline around March, and you realize, ugh, things aren't working out with Rudy. Doesn't seem like he's going to come back, or he's definitely going to get a supermax contract, and the Jazz don't want to sign him to that. Then you could potentially move him for a guy who was a top five pick in this year's draft and a player with a big salary like an Andrew Wiggins, which is exactly what the Jazz did when they got Devin Harris, excuse me, from the Nets, and then of course the guy who was the number three overall pick in Derek Favors. So you could see something like that happen, but I don't think the Jazz do it this offseason. Cameron Young, what are your thoughts on a stretchy five off the bench? Conley excelled with Gasol in Memphis, and Mitchell has never been a pick and pop, has never had a pick and pop five to give him space. Thinking of guys like Ibaka, Gasol, and Baines. I think Gasol's cooked. I think his career is probably over. Baines is a guy I've talked about already on this podcast. I agree. I actually think there's probably some secret value there. Like, he has potential to start. He started in place of DeAndre Ayton when Ayton was suspended for whatever his drug issue was early in the season. So I think that's positive for the Jazz, and I think Baines would make sense. You would hope maybe his relationship with Joe Ingles from the Australian national team could play in the Jazz favor. But Baines makes a ton of sense for the Jazz and might be worth the full MLE. I don't know if he'll get it. He's 33. He's had some injury issues. He didn't play at all in the bubble. And Phoenix can bring him back if they want to. But if he gets, you know, a good offer and the Jazz wanted to match that or kind of, you know, say, hey, we can give you a bigger role and be our seventh guy, I wouldn't rule that out. I think that that actually makes some sense for the Jazz. I think that could be something they would look at. And I like Baines. I think everyone should like Baines. He's a guy who's played with really good coaches. He's played for Greg Popovich, Brad Stevens, and now with Monty Williams in Phoenix. So he's been coached well throughout his career. So I wouldn't rule that out at all. All right, I'm looking at my questions. I think that's all I got. Let me do one more quick scan of this to see if anyone else got one in. I'm sorry if I miss anybody. It looks like that's it. Appreciate everyone who tweeted at me and, of course, for listening to this podcast. I try and keep these around 30 minutes. Looks like that's about exactly where we are right now, so a perfect time to end it. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. As always, read me at kslsports.com. We'll be back with you next week for another episode of Jazz Notes.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.